So not to make this into like just like a wedding planning podcast, Justin.
All right, let's do it. Let's plan this wedding. Let's do it. What'd you just plan?
So there's like not a lot of things that like I really, really want. And it's not to say that like I don't want, like I don't have opinions, but like there's not like things that like need to be there for me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
One of the things that I've been like, oh, it would be cool if, is like, it would be cool if we could have like live music being played for the walk in, like when we're like, when like Elena's coming down the aisle and all that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I found a group, like a quartet group that was like down to play, you know, some of the songs that I was like, you know, maybe we could do this or something like this. And I was like, just curious, like, how much does it cost? And I'm not, and here's me not complaining that people are asking for money for the things that they do.
Correct.
But here is me simply being perhaps a little surprised at how expensive this is. And now when you think about it all in total, the amount of work that needs to be done, this is absolutely 100% acceptable. But for, I'm going to say 8 minutes of music, it is $2,000.
Oh, is it like, what kind of band are we talking about? Is it just like a small
like
group?
A string quartet. So for four.
Eight
so
minutes?
Let me pull up the email that they sent me.
I got a good follow up for this too, but I'm excited to hear this email because yeah, you're right. Live music I think would be expensive in general, but that seems astronomical. Maybe they
Okay. So they say for wedding ceremonies, we typically begin with the music while your guests are arriving about 15 minutes prior to the start of the ceremony. So like 15 minutes plus, you know, 5 minutes as everyone's walking in. And then 5 minutes as they walk out. So I guess that's like 30 minutes. So, okay, that is like, that is not an unreasonable price, but I was just surprised.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Are they specifically like known for weddings or are they just like a string quartet group?
I found them on
group?
theknot.com. For sure that'll do it, right?
Because I would assume even when guests are arriving, that would probably be like a half hour before the ceremony will probably be a half hour, so it's probably about an hour, which seems, I know that seems crazy, but it seems less crazy than just them playing as she was walking down the aisle.
Yes, 100%. And again, I'm not trying to complain that like they want to get paid for, of course, obviously, but it's just like in my mind, and also I'm going off of like being a local musician where you play for an hour and you make negative $25 because you had to pay to be there.
Whatever.
Or like, and yeah, again, it's totally fine. But like, damn, $2,000. Nope. You know,
Are you familiar with the band Rod Tough Curls and the Bench Press?
I am not.
So they're a cover band. We first knew them through Indiana. Claire went there and I had visited a couple of my friends who went to IU and we like heard them like play, but they do a lot of like local traveling around the area. They're a pretty well-known cover band locally here. Fun group. I highly recommend going to one of their concerts. And in fact, they're one of the people that we kind of follow to various places, whether it's in the Downers Grove when they have their summer things, or we went to, it's like the Wheaton fields where they have like
I remember you went to this over the summer or something, right?
So we go there a lot, right? And we were talking and just kind of like casually, we were seeing one of their concerts at Veggie Fest. And we were like, all right, how much would it be theoretically to have them play at our wedding? And this was like early in our relationship. Like this was like, we weren't engaged yet, right? This is in 2017. Yeah. I sent this email out just to kind of get some general ideas about it. We didn't even have a New Year's wedding picked or anything like that. I literally wrote in the booking, P.S. we're watching them at the Eyes of the Sky Festival now. And inspiration hit me about this is how I literally ended the email message.
Cute. Very cute.
So their booker responds to me. The band charges $10,500 for up to 3 hours of live music at a local private event. They're currently available for the following dates. Please let me know if you're interested and have any questions. I did not respond.
Nope.
Plus, it was just
I'm glad that you can charge that,
right?
Because you are worth it, and that's what you're worth. holy shit, I don't have that.
And that's in 2017 money. Prices have gone crazy higher since then. So I can only imagine what it would have been like in 2021.
Hearing you say that, though, 2020? Made me feel so much better, though, because hearing, okay, $2,000 for this string quartet for, you know, like 30 to 45 minutes of music on the upper end of it, got me worried that, like, wait, what, it's like a DJ that expensive? And if you are saying that $10,500 was a little ridiculous for the band, like, then that makes me feel good that, like, okay, no, this will be fine. This will be fine.
Yeah. And, like, too, with, like, money and stuff like that, I think one of the things that you were saying as, like, someone who doesn't get paid much at, like, these, like, local venues that you go to, the wedding culture is a completely different culture, right?
100% different.
Like, buying a Hershey's chocolate bar at a grocery store would cost you $2, but if you bought a Hershey's chocolate bar from your wedding venue, it would cost a ridiculous amount of money. If you did that. I mean, it's just about one of those things. You got to think about what you truly want, kind of go through and then see, like where you want to put your money and stuff like that. And again, for people who aren't interested in weddings and stuff like that, think about a big old party that you're planning. If you want to be a big party planner, this is the great, kind of way to go about planning, for your, ideas and like finding out how much things are going to cost. So get your party right. Have a fun party. 'Cause a wedding is ultimately about having that party.
And that's the other thing too, is like, oh, you know, that sucks, but it's still going to be a good time even if we don't do that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And, or like we will find a perhaps a more affordable version of that. So it should be fine. It's Hitbox. Welcome back to Hitbox episode number 223. A little late night recording of this one. My name is Peter Husbandick, and joining me as always is my wonderful friend and co-host Justin Makovich. You doing well, Justin?
Yeah, no, I'm doing good. We're in like critical state of teaching time here. We're the final exam week. I just want to let everyone know that our school did something that they thought was quite progressive. They decided to stop our final exam schedule. You know, because like we don't need final exams for kids. They're too stressful for kids. We don't need final exams. So we don't give final exams anymore. No, ladies and gentlemen, we just give end of unit tests in the last week. So literally nothing has changed for these students.
It's just branding.
It's just branding of it. Plus the schedule is now bad because when Peter and I went to the same high school, dear listener, and we had this awesome schedule when we were in high school. I think you still had it when you were there, when finals were like you basically had three periods a day and you got out at like 1:11 or 1 o'clock, like really early. And it was like the perfect way because you only had to focus on a few of your finals. You might have three in one day, but more likely than not, you'd have two in a day. So it would be plenty of time to study, do anything you needed to, kind of like breathe and relax between stuff. Now we don't have that anymore. It's just like eight period days with a random assessment at various periods and stuff like that. And as someone who's been at this school for 20 years, I have seen a significant increase of stress in students since we've implemented these policies for them, which is just kind of unfortunate. But with that, I just have a lot of grading and stuff like that. So guess how many games I played this weekend, Peter?
Zero.
Zero is the answer.
I played enough for the both of us. Don't worry.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I did the game I did play this weekend. I know we're kind of jumping ahead here, but I did play the downloading the update for my Xbox Series X so I could download some games. So I downloaded the games I play. I downloaded Call of Duty Black Ops. And then I downloaded Indiana Jones.
Mitsugami?
No. Indiana Jones in the Great Circle.
Can I say, though, that for the Game Awards hype trailer, the thumbnail? Kanitsugami Path of the Goddess.
What if they allowed write-ins for the game of the year? I guess they do because Black Myth Wukong.
There's like that player choice.
Yeah. But also Black Myth Wukong is also there. So, I mean, technically, if you had a write-in category, I guarantee you Black Myth would win that this year. But yeah, I bet if there was a write-in and it was sent to specifically just you, Kintsugami Path of the Goddess would be one of the games of the year.
It's because here's the thing. Is it the best game of the year? No. Is it a game that I think deserves more recognition? 100%. You know what I mean?
Let's just do a game awards. Let's do a quick check about the nominees here and how they stack up against your favorite game of the year, Kintsugami Path of the Goddess.
Okay.
Have you played Astrobot yet?
No.
Okay, so that's a wash, but do you think you would like Astrobot better or Kintsugami Path of the Goddess?
I would probably. Here's the thing. I bet I want to play Astrobot. I bet I will have fun with it and then never think about it again. Kintsugami wins.
Okay, great. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth or Kintsugami Path of the Goddess?
The highs of Final Fantasy are higher. The lows of Final Fantasy don't even come close. Like there are no lows in Kintsugami that are even fucking close to the lows of...
It's like straight up just average throughout the whole time.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Like, Kintsugami, just like a good time. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like I loved it. I had fun.
What I'm hearing is Kintsugami Path of the Goddess.
I would give it to that, yes.
Metaphor Refantasio.
This isn't on our sheet. I picked up Metaphor this week.
Because I
played 40 hours of it, and then I just dropped it for other games, and I was like, oh, let me get back to this. And I played one fight. And I like kind of felt had this like feeling in my chest where I was like, I don't like this. Why am I doing this? Mm-mm. I don't like this. Why am I trying to play this game? And then I was like, I should just stop. So I'm done. I'm done with Metaphor.
So what you're saying is,
so Kintsugami wins.
Okay, this one maybe be a little bit tougher. Balatro or Kintsugami Path of the Goddess?
I would say Balatro.
Okay, and then, did I miss Black Myth Wukong?
You did, but I haven't played it, but...
Kintsugami, Path of the Goddess.
I imagine it would probably be Kintsugami, yeah.
And then Elden Ring, Shadow of the Erdtree. Are you going to vote on principle that you wouldn't have nominated it, or the fact that you enjoyed that game more or less
than Kintsugami?
Yeah, yeah. What's the vote here?
On principle, the vote is Kintsugami, but on enjoyment, Elden Ring wins.
So, but to be clear, like if it was a list and Kintsugami was on it versus Elden Ring, you would vote for...
I would vote for if it was those two games and I had to vote for one of them, I would vote for Kintsugami because out of principle, you know what I'm saying? Because yeah. like it's a great DLC. It's not a 2024 release.
And again, just to kind of continue this conversation, this thought experiment here, because that's now that we know Kintsugami only lost to Balatro, which by the way, shocking statement, but also not an unexpected statement to be clear.
No. And it's for the games that are in that list.
Right. No, exactly. It's not like these are terrible games. It's just like what your preferences are compared to them. In the real list here, the only two that kind of like you paused towards were Balatro and then Elden Ring, Shadow of the Erdtree.
Yeah.
If you were voting, would you vote for Balatro or Elden Ring based on the fact that Elden Ring, Shadow of the Erdtree may or may not be just glorified DLC?
I mean, it is DLC, right? But I would vote for Balatro.
Okay. And
that is because I would vote for Balatro.
Can I be honest with you? This is going to be one of the most... I know this isn't the Game Awards yet, but we can talk about it yet because they haven't happened yet. If it was Elden Ring on this list, not Shadow of the Erdtree.
So like if Elden Ring came out this
Elden
year...
If Elden Ring came out this year, it would be my game of the year, Peter.
I would vote for Elden Ring
enthusiastically
base game over Balatro. Yes.
Yeah, enthusiastically. I think it would be a pretty easy vote for me to say that. Which again, let's talk about the real victories of this year.
Insane that you went to that game this year and were like, hey, this is true. I recently, like over the last year, discovered that the band Nirvana is pretty good.
And like, okay.
I've been telling people, like, have you guys like listened to Nirvana?
like this unknown like, little indie band named Nirvana.
Yeah, and that's you with Elden Ring.
Exactly.
Like, you know, Elden Ring's good. I'm like, yeah, man.
It's really good, man. It's a pretty darn good game. But I just find that like a wild like comparison. And that doesn't mean that the games this year are bad by any means. I think there are some good ones. Like for me, I think there are three games on here are pretty top tier games for me. One of them I haven't really played yet, but I like played enough of it to know that I want to finish it. And I did buy it in Metaphor. But yeah, what an interesting.
Can I say something
list. Wild? Yeah,
I would vote for Final Fantasy over Metaphor.
I don't know if that's wild. I think
wild for me, like if you were to tell me that at the beginning of the year, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I guess that would be kind of wild too. But I also feel like your heart really fell in love with Persona 3 Reload this year. That was kind of like that scratched that itch for you. So then when someone kept scratching that itch after it was already scratched, it just kind of hurt, you know?
Yeah, it's all raw and chapped.
Yeah, we're good. I'm good.
Gross. Well, Justin, I'm glad you're doing good. Let me give you a quick preview of what's coming up in the news here. It's not a heavy news week, but there are things to talk about. Speaking of Elden Ring, Elden Ring 2 is not in development, according to Hidetaka Miyazaki. X-Defiant, the so-called Call of Duty killer, is X disappearing. I thought that was kind of clever. And Marvel Rivals might just be the next big thing. We're going to talk about those headlines and more. Before we get into the rest of this episode, though, I want to tell our listeners that they can join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. They can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod. Like Jay Knoll, GKS, and Josh Durham are $3 deluxe podcast producers. You can either be $3 deluxe podcast producer or a $1 podcast producer. If you can't support us monetarily, that's fine. You can follow us on Twitter at HitboxPod or rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Justin, will you join me in the Metacritic Roundup?
Let's go!
Metacritic Roundup.
Two video games in the Metacritic Roundup this week. The first one is Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. Scored an 87 on the PC, an 87 on the Xbox Series X, and of course is unscored on the PlayStation 5, as it is not on the platform yet. Justin, yeah, it'll be there. I have played.
Let's talk about our document, the document that you slaved over for hours working on, just putting all this effort in that I had no contribution to at all. I'm going to be honest with that. So understand that first of all,
your contribution was because we copy the doc from episode to episode so that we just like have the format down. Your contribution was coming and deleting the games you played last week.
So again, I don't want to like look a gift horse in the mouth over here, but when I was looking at this, right, I see one other game that's in the Metacritic Roundup that you also wrote on the games you played. So then when you tell me that Indiana Jones and the Great Circle is something that is both in the Metacritic Roundup, but you didn't write it on your preview. Before we talk about this game, I need to know, why didn't you write it in the games that you played box?
I like keeping you like on your toes.
You like doing this to me? Like,
I do. Cause I think it's more fun. It's more fun if you don't have all the cards. You know what I mean? This isn't Bellatro.
Yeah. Well, even then I still don't have all the cards, you know?
I'm always deleting them. I'm always getting a new one.
I gotta get some that have multipliers in them. Why don't I get ones with multipliers in them? For the love of God, I need some multipliers here. Okay.
I like to keep you on your toes. I like to keep you feeling frosty and fresh, Justin.
Just like my tips used to be in high school, says all those students.
Exactly. Yeah. If you had frosted tips in high school, it would have been a good look. I didn't.
And I had to bring out the yearbooks to prove it. And they still don't believe me. The photographic evidence wasn't enough. It's because I had puka shells.
It can be doctored. It can be doctored.
Yeah, they're like, you have puka shells. But anyway, tell me about this Metacritic score. What's going on with this thing?
So let me say this first. Let me preface. I've played like 2 hours of it because I am reviewing a projector for work. And so today I had an excuse to play games on the projector on the wall over here.
Okay.
And so I was like, well, what am I going to do? And I was like, oh, I'll play Indiana Jones because it's out. So I downloaded it over my lunch break and then played about 2 hours of it. I haven't played enough to be able to say, like, yes, this is an 87. But I have played enough of it to say, like, I don't know if this is an 87 for me. Maybe it gets really good. You know what I mean? It's good. It's fine. It's not bad. Like it is not bad. But in my experience, like, I'm having a good time, but it's also like, this is fine.
So generally for me, like right now, an 87 seems to be fantastic, right? Like that is a hit.
So I linked this tweet. This is a response to Gene Park. Gene Park tweeted, "No Indiana Jones review for me. 1 week, 4 business days is simply not enough time for one person. So far, I think it's well designed and bigger than you'd expect. My only issue, I actively dislike Indy Jones. If you have no interest, I'm not sure this will change your mind." And then this guy responds, "It's crazy that an 87 on Open Critic would make it the 36th. 36th. That's a hard number to say. The 36th highest rated game of 2024. Either this year has been a banger or scores are getting out of control." I would say a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
Wow. I like to listen to multiple sources when it comes to reviews, right? I think that's why Metacritic is great, not because it is the authority, but because it's an aggregate. Just like OpenCritic is also an aggregate of stuff. You get a better idea about the general view of it. And just because it's the general view doesn't mean you or I agree on it. Like a game to get an 87, though, is one of those things that if I were to see a game that I was slightly interested in scoring 87, I'd get it.
Yeah.
And most of the time when I am looking for a game, I will cross-reference reviews and like hear people's previews about it to understand kind of like what's going on. And the funny thing is this is one of the few times that I've only have one data point on the preview for this. And that is our good friends over at Kind of Funny.
Oh, sure.
And the reason I saw these score, like my whole context of this game coming in was I don't trust Xbox, right? At all.
Yeah.
Don't trust
it. 100%.
No trust, 100%. No faith. And then the preview started coming and I think it was Blessing in Paris who went to preview the game.
Okay.
And Blessing was disappointed with it. He said that it just wasn't fun. The open world kind of felt weird. The combat felt a little weird. Paris was a little bit nicer on it towards it. He seemed more positive towards it, but ultimately was like, we'll have to wait and see to it. And then the review comes out. I think Greg Miller gave it a 6 out of 10 or 6.5 out of 10, one of those two. And Paris gave it a 7 out of 10, right?
Yeah.
So then these review scores come in and I'm like, oh, that's weird. Because usually I feel like the one thing about Kind of Funny is that each of their like personality, they have different personalities when it comes to games and different likes and opinions. They're not all the same. And like you go for different people for different things. And the fact that Greg gave it a lower score like that and Paris gave it not a low score, but like an average score in stark contrast to these things. And then I start listening to reviews. I start hearing people talk about it. I start hearing other stuff and they seem to echo the same negativity, but gave it a higher score.
We've talked about this a little bit, right? That like, I mean, I think that it is that video game scores are like reviewers are too kind.
Yeah.
This scored the same as Silent Hill 2 Remake.
Right.
You know what I mean? And like that is, in my opinion, that's not an incredible video game. You
right.
know, like,
right.
like an 87 for me is like something excellent, you know? And I haven't played this whole thing, so I can't say, but like that seems a little high. And you're right. All the criticism, like people have a lot of critiques for this game, but for whatever reason, it scored 87. Greg Miller tweeted, I just looked, Indiana Jones and the Great Circle is not a great video game. He get it. Yeah. At 6.5. Right. So it's fine. It's good. But like, it's not something that is like spectacular, you know what I mean? Or particularly noteworthy, which so far with my time with it, I would say that is true. I would say that this game has one of the worst openings of any game this year. It starts with, now, are you a big Indiana Jones guy?
Yes, I love 1 and 3.
Okay, so you're the exact right type of Indiana Jones
guy. Okay, yeah. There you go.
1 and 3 are fucking like 10 out of 10 spectacular films.
Yeah.
2 is all right. 4 is not great. And then the last one was embarrassing.
Yeah, I haven't seen the last one yet. But
yes, 100%. I'm in the same category. We're okay. Like, it's rough.
Did I ever tell you that to the premiere of the Crystal Skull, we went to the midnight premiere of it. I dressed up like a Jedi and had a lightsaber with me. Does that surprise you?
Did tell
you?
Me that.
Okay, thank you.
Not at all. It does not surprise me, but I 100% knew this about you. It's absolutely your brand and of humor.
I got a cheer when I lifted up my lightsaber in front of that auditorium.
I bet you did. So this game starts with a one-to-one recreation of the opening scene of Raiders of the Lost Ark, of like the first Indiana Jones movie. Except, here's the thing, man. That movie, I've seen it so many times, and like it is so iconic that that opening is like ingrained in my brain. It is like etched into my brain. And there is so much that you could like, I feel like you could write a really excellent like essay about how that is such an effective opening sequence. You know what I mean? You're walking, they're walking through the jungle, and then like you don't really see Indiana Jones's face, and he's like, he's pulling out the poison darts, and then the guys who he's with are like reveling in the fact that he knows all this stuff, and the guy pulls out the gun and he's gonna kill him, and then Indiana Jones turns around with the whip and he drops the gun, he runs off, and then he walks into light, he's got the hat on. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I know this.
If
scene.
You want, and it's like so well done. This guy, Steven Spielberg, who I don't know who he is. I don't know if he has ever made anything else, but he's great. Like, yeah, someone to watch for sure.
Familiar with him. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. If you were ever wanting to watch that, like recreated digitally and it looks like shitty and like janky, that's how the game opens. It's like, it's so awkward because you know what this looks like and you know, like all of the like character that gets like expressed through these moments. But have you ever wanted to play it and it like sucks? It's like really awkward looking, and like the lighting is all bad, and like not moody and edgy in the way that like the original one is. Whatever, it leads with the bad foot forward, and then when it like the game actually starts in earnest, it's like it's okay. It is clunky and awkward, is how I would describe it. Basically, like I've played up until the first like semi open world section. So basically, like, it starts with that opening, and then you have a little bit of a, you're running around the school that he teaches at, and then you go on a mission in the Vatican, in Vatican City in Italy, and then you have, like, an open world section in the city. And I got to the open world section, that's where I stopped.
Okay.
I did a little bit of running around in there. And the mission is, like, nighttime in the Vatican, and you are like stealthing around and like learning the combat, and it is like all like melee combat. You do have a gun, but like you don't have many bullets for it. And it's also like, you know, you shoot your gun, you're gonna alert everyone. So like very melee and stealth focused. And like you can pick up like anything that's just like around. So you can pick up bottles, and like there's like batons everywhere, or like you can pick up like a crutch and hit people with, or like find like a hammer or something like that. And like all the weapons in the bottom right corner like have like durability, so like you can hit someone three times with this thing before it breaks, you know. But like if you are holding an item and then you go to climb a ladder, you just automatically drop the item. Or if you are holding an item and you end up like picking up keys and stuff like that to like open doors, it's a little immersive simmy. There's like a lot of different paths through the level and stuff like that. If you're holding an item and you want to unlock a door with a key, you just drop the item on the ground. It's so clunky and awkward. Or like if you are trying to deal with there's like different food you can eat to like help your like stamina or your HP and like buff it. I think if you pull out the food, you also drop your shit, and it's just so awkward because you're constantly like dropping things and like, where the fuck did that go? You pick it up and you're like, got it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's I'm trying to think of a game that this seems very familiar to.
It but feels like 8 years old.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where it's like, it's fine, but it's like, there's this like level of like, why wasn't this streamlined somewhere, you know? Cause there could be a situation where you drop something that you wanted, that you needed, you know? And then you're like, oh shit, now I'm kind of out of luck. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Ah, geez. That is just, cause I mean, to be honest, like watching the previews of this game, the thing that I was concerned about was it looking clunky, specifically. And by the previews, was that the Game Awards where they had that extended one, or the Xbox showcase? Where they had them fighting the people on the...
Yes, it was at the Summer Game Fest.
And I remember watching that, and like some of the stuff felt like Indiana Jones, but watching the actual combat happening looked awkward. The cutting from third person to first person looked awkward, having to watch that kind of stuff. Is it awkward more in the mechanical flow, or is it awkward in the presentation, like kind of what I was saying? You also said it was kind of like janky in that opening scene compared to the original.
Well, it's just tough because like comparing what the game looks like on, at least on the Xbox, like I know what it looks like in my mind because it's real life. You know what I mean? So like I have a one-to-one direct comparison. So like it's also, it is not as high fidelity. Like I think that Xbox game studios are not making games at the fidelity level of those PlayStation games.
Mm.
You know what I mean? In terms of what they look like. I don't think that's necessarily like a super bad thing. Cause like, hey, it means like your people can go home on time. I imagine maybe, you know what I mean? And like,
or get
your
games fired are gonna immediately take 9 after release years
to come out. Yeah. So LOL. Perhaps, right.
Yeah. Sorry. That's rude.
No, but you're right though. But so it's just not a totally flattering comparison. You know what I mean? To like think about like, oh man, like this is not entirely lifelike and the animations are not like totally all there and like the faces don't look incredible. I'll say Troy Baker is doing a fucking phenomenal job as Indiana Jones.
Impersonation or new character?
Impersonation.
Okay.
I mean, it just sounds like Harrison Ford. But he's doing that thing where he's like, rah, rah, rah. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like that's you'll know what I mean. Like when you play the game, way he just like croaks about things and whatever. It's fine. This game is fine so far. Again, I've played 2 hours of it. I'm interested enough. I found some cool, like I solved a puzzle on my own that was like off the beaten path that I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And it's like an environmental puzzle that like, if you didn't read the documents that you find scattered about, like you would have never seen, you know what I mean? Like, oh, there's a puzzle by flipping these paintings upside down. And the only reason you figure that out is because there's like documents around telling you about it. I thought that was kind of neat. I could have missed it. But it's fine. I think 87 is a very high score for this. I would give this probably, yeah, like a 6.5 or 7. But again, I've only played like 2 hours.
Yeah. What is the general like storytelling? I know you're early in it, so it's not that far, but how does the storytelling feel, like the story part of it? Because I don't care, I could be playing a janky piece of shit game, but if there's like compelling narrative that gets me going, I would probably play it still.
Yeah, I mean, it's Indiana Jones. So basically it starts with the cold open of the first game for the first movie for no reason, like not connected at all. They just wanted to do that.
I'm guessing it's a tutorial.
Yeah, but like, you could have done that in any other way, like literally any other way. I don't know why I had to do it like this, because it's also like not the entire tutorial. Like, like there's like other. When you get to Rome, it's like more tutorial stuff. Like, OK, like you could have just done the whole thing here. Anyway, basically, the premise is Indiana Jones is hanging out at the school he works at. And then all of a sudden, after hours, this giant like 7 foot tall guy breaks into the school and steals an artifact, and Indiana Jones catches him as he's stealing it. And he like knocks him out, and the guy knocks Indiana Jones out. And then it's like, well, what did he steal? I gotta go find him. And then he goes off to Italy, and that's where I'm at.
Oh, okay. So it's like very, very, very early with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's just very like, I met one of Indiana Jones' old friends, and like, there seems to be some intrigue there. Like, in Italy, now I'm dressed as a priest, because the Vatican City is controlled by because Italy, it's 1936, so Mussolini is at the top. All the enemies, like in the subtitles, it just is, they're just called Fascist One, Fascist Two, which is funny.
It's better than Jeremy. Just call him Jeremy and John
from The Last of Us Two. Yeah. Just Bobby. They got Jordan. a lot of people in the comments of all the articles talking about this are like, just like, oh no, it's a Klan rally. because I guess people don't understand that Indiana Jones, when he says like Nazis, I hate those guys, hates Nazi. I don't know. Like, it's movies about like shooting those guys. You know what I mean?
Whoa, wow, what a controversial statement, Indiana.
It's so interesting. Geeta Jackson, they are a reporter. They used to work for The Verge and a handful of different sites. They're at Aftermath now, which is like a reporter owned site from a bunch of different people, like industry people. They run on Twitter like saying like Machine Games could never make Wolfenstein 1 and 2 again because of the way that people are now. Because if you remember, like the trailers for those games were just so Nazi hating, which is good, which is right, and like, it's insane that you couldn't be able to make that now without receiving this like insane backlash.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So because like this game is so like, you know, it takes that same stance, because that's the stance Indiana Jones takes, you know, with like fascism and all this stuff. But
the stance that Nazis suck.
Yeah, insane, right?
Crazy thought, guys. Just crazy.
That's but like it's a little we gotta not
take
toothless,
a stance
but it's
on that. Jesus Christ.
But it's like less like it's yeah, got less no. teeth than Wolfenstein because you're not like skewering them and like, you know, whatever.
Yeah, you're
like
hitting it's, people it's a, with.
I think this is tea, right?
I don't know.
Like rated tea?
Can you hit people with like loaves of bread?
You're hitting people with like frying pans.
Okay.
I'm in. Let me say this. I don't think you're going to dislike this game. I think this is worth playing. I'm going to keep playing it. I've got a busy few weeks here, but I'm hoping to beat it before I you know, have to turn in my Game Pass card.
So but, my next question was going to be, do you think I will like it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry. I took a swig of my nog.
You took a swig of your nog and your voice went so high with that that the Discord cut it out. So.
Oh, did it really? It's so funny. Yeah. Yeah, you'll like this. You will get a kick out of this. It is, I think, just the right kind of like amount of story for amount of like exploration stuff, but also being kind of linear. You know, like
now
this is a proper AAA game, if that makes sense, in terms of like what it is asking of you.
That means I'm gonna give it an 8.7 out of 10 because I'm a gross sheep.
Nothing wrong with liking this game. Yeah. I like this game. It's just it's a little simple, it's a little awkward. It feels like
old.
If this had like six more months, it would be like, oh, they really got this down. You know what I mean?
So when it comes out for the PlayStation, it'll be definitively better.
I think that's probably true. And it'll probably run better because I bet they'll have it on PS5 Pro.
Yeah, probably. This game kind of reminds me the way people are talking about it and the way that I ended up really liking it, the Guardians of the Galaxy game. Does that kind of like ring similar or is it like...
No. Like I would say that I was expecting this to be more Uncharted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not at all.
Okay.
This is weirdly enough, almost more Dishonored.
Okay.
That's not it at all, but it plays like that a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where it's kind of like a more open-ended environment and like sort of dropping you in and doing all that stuff. And then also there's like, I'm in this open world section right now where like you are not meant to fight people. You can, like there's places to stealth around and like restricted areas that you're not supposed to be in if you're like looking for clues and stuff like that. But like, you would not encounter these sections in Uncharted or Guardians of the Galaxy, which is a strictly linear sort of progression of things. You know what I mean?
I hear that you don't get experience points from killing people, but you do by exploring.
You get experience points from finding collectible documents, from finding artifacts, and from solving puzzles. And then when you spend the experience points, you have to find books. And you open the book and it tells you what perk you can get and what perk you can buy with the experience point, but you don't automatically get it. And you have to have enough experience points to buy the book, if that makes sense.
And then if you don't have enough, you have to put the book down?
No, you keep the book.
Oh, okay. Got it.
But it also means that there's perks that you're going to miss, probably. You know what I mean?
Oh, God.
So it just means that you're going to want to explore. But also, like, I feel like I thoroughly explored the first level. Like, I feel like I must have found every single thing that was there. And it wasn't taking me to so long, you know what I mean? Like it was like an appropriate amount of time to search this whole thing.
Peter, I have a prediction about myself.
Yes.
I predict this will be in my top five games of 2024.
I bet it will be. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
And I'm only saying that because like, I don't have faith in it right now. And I hope, just like anything you do in life, if you're not expecting it to be good, I hope to be surprised pleasantly.
I was shocked at how I did not like the opening sequence. Like I was like baffled. I was like, what? It's bad.
Yeah.
Well, it was like almost like Redfall. It's not that bad, but it was like that same feeling of like, it's bad. What? It's bad. And then it starts improper and you're like, oh no, this is kind of fun.
While you were talking, I was putting on some B-roll of the IGN did a side by side between the original.
Dude,
and
it is not good to look at favorable like that.
I have to say, when it is simply just some of the cutscenes, it didn't look terrible. Mm-hmm. But whenever there was an interactive bit to it, or like, there's a moment where he like puts his hand up in the light to have the thing go by.
Yep.
He like goes like it's like the most stiff up thing in
the
light.
It's stiff. Yeah. The animations are stiff. They feel very like, this is going to sound so mean, like early Xbox One. And the clunkiness of it feels that way as well.
Well, I mean,
where they have the ability to have more assets, but they don't know what to do with them, you know?
When you say Xbox One, do you mean the original Xbox or the system titled the Xbox One?
The system titled the Xbox One.
Got it. Just clarifying, not that these naming conventions are at all confusing for us.
Dude, the digital recreation of Alfred Molina is fucking homunculus. It's like so horrific to look at. It looks so bad.
How long before someone mods in a Doc Ock?
Now, I can get down with that. I can get down. I bet eventually someone is going to remake this where it is Han Solo and like the bad guys are stormtroopers. And now at that point, that's a really fucking good game.
Let's get it on the PC now, right now, friends.
Yeah. Now, actually, I'm so down for the texture like swap. But Indiana Jones and the Great Circle, we're going to play more. I mean, I imagine you're going to play it this week at some point or like this month. I'll be interested to hear what you think of it.
Yeah, my goal is to try to play it next week, if not this weekend. Gotcha. I might have a little time. I'm done with my grad school class on Sunday.
Huge.
So, woo!
Yeah, so there you go. Next game is Marvel Rivals. Justin, on Metacritic, it's got a 72 on PC from 5 reviews, unscored on the PS5 and Xbox Series X. I've played a fuck ton of this game.
Oh.
I've played a fuck ton of Marvel Rivals on the PS5. And Justin, this game is really good.
This
game is really, really good.
Fucking bet. And just to like be clear, those 5 reviews, like the game has just kind of like came out, so it's probably a lot of review in progresses, if that.
Yeah, and there were no. I don't think there were codes for this.
Yeah,
because it was this big online game.
Yeah. All right, so Mr. Former Overwatch addict, tell me about this game and why you're liking it.
You know, Overwatch?
I've heard of
it. Remember Overwatch 1 when it was like good?
Yeah.
Before they kind of like before they overcooked it.
That's a different game. My wife and I can't play with each other.
Me and Elena love that game together.
Don't you get frustrated with each other?
Not at all. We are so like in sync. It's kind of, we play it in absolute silence because we just like, we just know.
Yeah, we would too, because we'd have been in a big fight over something.
it's a big blood argument, yeah. Okay, so you know, like Overwatch 1?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that. It's great.
Hell yeah. I have to say, like, looking at this, I think this game is going to be awesome. And I think the amount of support, don't they have like 30-some characters at this point already?
There are a lot of characters in it, yes.
And the fact that it's free to play, I feel like I wish I didn't put that 8 to 10 hours into Concord. And
sure.
I wish I could have put that time into this game. And I still might. I think I was actually going to talk about potentially doing this as a bonus show episode with you. Not knowing that if you played it or not, I thought we could just like pull in there. I'd be Wolverine, you'd be Loki, you know, normal stuff.
Loki's a little too complicated for me.
Oh,
okay. I'm better. I've played like this game is really good.
Oh.
So if you're not familiar, Marvel Rivals is Overwatch with Marvel characters
and six characters, right?
And in a million fucking characters.
Well, no, I mean like 6 characters per team.
Yes.
Back to 6v6.
Yep. I'll say this: Mike Ybarra, former president of Blizzard. Tweeted, looks like Overwatch Marvel Rivals ships tomorrow. Much like Light of Mortium, a clear copy of Horizon Zero Dawn out of China. I mean, even the character name, Widowmaker in Overwatch versus Black Widow in Marvel Rivals, LOL. NetEase/Tencent, all the same. Basically saying, like, this is a blatant ripoff of Overwatch. I think here's the thing. I think there's a case to be made for that. His case of saying Black Widow is a copy of Widowmaker from Overwatch is insane, because as the community note points out, Black Widow made her comic debut in 1964. she's like a sniper character.
A sniper healer?
No, but that's Anna from...
Yeah, because, you know, clearly Overwatch. I know everything about Overwatch, so...
Certainly.
I'm an expert.
Yes, there are similarities, but like, no, they're not the same character. And yeah, just very silly. But it is a very, very, very close game. Like, they're very similar games in terms of, like, their objectives, in terms of, like, how many of the characters play. Like, Star-Lord plays a lot like Tracer from Overwatch. Magneto plays similarly to Reinhardt. Like, there are a lot of, like, there are similarities there for sure. But, like, I chalk that up more to genre than to, like, copying. You know what I mean? Like, oh, let me go play my favorite Assassin's Creed 2 clone. Metal Gear Solid 5, like, just different games. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, they're similar because, like, they're in the same genre, but like, no, they are different, you know?
Well, I mean, any fighting game to a certain point has similarities between characters and stuff like that. Oh, is it another grappler character? Oh, you got another big character just like this other character? Like, at a certain point, you have, like, these archetypes for all these different games.
Yeah, and also, like, hey, Mike Ybarra, if you wanted Overwatch to be better, you should have made it fucking better when you were there for 5 years.
And for the love of goodness, it was amazing for a long time.
Yeah, until you guys fucked it up.
Right.
Like, yes. It's great. I'm having a lot of fun with it. There are, I think my critique is that there are too many characters, which it's overwhelming to want to try a new character because you're like, I don't know if I'm going to be any good at this guy if you don't play them in, like, practice, in the practice range. And also it means that it can be difficult. Like, the best part about Overwatch is when you know what all of the other like opposing characters are capable of, and you know what your character you should choose to fit the role that you need to fill. You know what I mean? So, like, if you are a DPS character, you shouldn't be going against a tank character alone, but you can say, like, okay, I'll keep them at mid to long range and have another DPS character. We can, you know, sort of like tag team them, you know what I'm saying? And be able to take them down that way. And then if you're on the team with the tank, you go like, okay, our tank keeps getting killed really fast. I need to be a healer so that I can, you know, like, make sure that our tank is okay and all that sort of stuff. And you get that knowledge based on, like, playing the game and knowing what each character is capable of.
Mm-hmm.
And when there's, like, a limited number of characters, like, that is relatively simple. Whereas in this game, because there's, like, so many fucking characters, it's like, I have no idea how I'm going to be able to kill Jeff the Land Shark.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, but
I mean, to be fair, it is because it is a new game that you still have to kind of get
100%
the ideas.
Cause even, like, I've got the photo, like a piece of art from the original Overwatch cast. And there's a lot of characters in there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So yes, 100%. But I don't know, like, it's a lot of fun. Like, I'm having a great time. It's free to play. It really, like, hits me with those, like, old school Overwatch vibes. I can't stop playing this. And also, the official account tweeted, the December 8th, what was that, yesterday? Yeah, 10 million players in 72 hours.
Yeah, I mean, the concurrent players was like 400 million, right? 400,000 right now. No, man.
Whoa.
I know that many people have probably seen Endgame, but that's not, I meant 400,000.
Yes. Yeah, this is huge, right? And it helps that it's free to play. And a lot of people are saying, like, why is this successful and
fucking Concord
wasn't?
It's Marvel. It's free. Well,
but that's not a lot. Yes. So it's multiple things, right? Marvel is part of it. But you look at Marvel's Midnight Suns. That game flopped. It's a great game. It flopped, right? You look at Marvel's Avengers. That game flopped, you know? Whereas this is a free-to-play live service Overwatch type game, like hero shooter with Marvel characters. And the best thing about this game, I did not experience a single issue with, like, load times or queue times or, like, servers weren't down. This game worked flawlessly day one with 10 million players. Astounding. Very happy about that.
So, like, I want to take Overwatch out of the description of this game. Can you explain to me, surface level, what this game is, what the game modes are, and what you think makes this unique?
Yeah, so it is a team-based 6v6 hero shooter. Less of a shooter, I guess. I'm not going to say Overwatch. It is a mix of characters who have long-range weapons and close-range abilities. So, like, some people are, like, using a sword, some people are using sniper rifles, some people are punching, like, all that sort of stuff. And it is objective-based, where basically there are only a handful of different objectives, which is typical for games in this genre. For example, sometimes it will be best of three area lockdown mode. So like basically you and the opposing team are equally distant from just a centralized area that you have to stand in, and whoever is able to stand in it longer unopposed wins the round. And then that's out of three, right? So two of three. And then there are modes like escort modes, where you basically have to get your characters around a cart or a chariot of some kind, or like a giant spider robot in the Spider-Man level. And when you are uncontested and you have like either duped enemies around or killed them all or pushed them back or some kind, you advance the chariot forward. And then while you are on offense, and if you're on defense, you are trying to stop the team from making it reach the end goal. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's objective based, and a lot of times it is like the objectives are like area based. Does that make sense?
Yeah. About
like you have to capture this like objective or push this thing along. And it's not like weighed by like how many kills you got or anything like that.
Talk to me about the individual kind of like characters, the team composition, and how the characters kind of control, like what is their, like, do they have like clear move sets, ultimates, that kind of thing?
So in games of this genre, there are typically three types of roles. There are tanks, healers, and DPS. So like DPS is the characters who like are just made to deal damage. They're typically good in skirmishes, have relatively low amounts of health, but they can dish out damage quickly and they can like skirt around because they're fast. Characters like Spider-Man or Star-Lord or Black Panther or Black Widow, Squirrel Girl are all DPS characters. So yeah, again, they're quick on their feet. They are able to dish out damage, but they are not robust. They go down pretty quick if they're kind of caught in the open or on their own. Then you have healers, so characters like Cloak and Dagger, characters like Loki, or who's the golden guy in Guardians of the Galaxy 3? Adam. I was going to call him Adam Driver, but it's not.
Warlock.
Adam Warlock, yes. And Mantis, those are all healers who just give support. They can either buff players or like increasing their like damage output or heal them, or Cloak and Dagger, basically you switch between Cloak or Dagger. And so Dagger is the healer and Cloak is the DPS character. So you kind of like can switch on the fly between like being on the offense and on the defense. Kind of an interesting character there. And then there are tanks. So characters like Venom or Magneto or Captain America or Groot. These are like bigger characters that have a lot of health and can deal a lot more damage, but they are typically slow and they are big targets for enemies. And so it's your job to basically like figure out how to position your team in such a way and connect with your team in such a way that you're able to best complement each other and each other's abilities, and also counter the abilities of the enemy teams. There's also something interesting in this game, not in any other games in the genre, called team up moves. So basically, like if you have two characters who are related to each other, like similar to each other, it's like two of three. There's like usually three that are related to one another. They will get like passive abilities or like additional moves. For example, if you have Venom in your party or on your team, and also either Spider-Man or Penny Parker, Spider-Man or Penny Parker get an additional Venom ability that they can just use. And you only get that because if you have Venom on your team. Or for example, Adam Warlock, Mantis, and Star-Lord have abilities that work together in tandem because they're just on a team together. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, to me, that sounds like that last part with the tandem abilities. That seems like it would create a lot of balancing issues.
Yes and no. I mean, maybe it will in the future.
Yeah.
It seems to be something that like people aren't really taking into consideration much right now because it's just like everyone's trying to find their footing. The abilities are not like overpowered. It just means that like the character has an additional thing that in their arsenal. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And also the cooldowns on those abilities are like 3 minutes. So if you use it once, it's like you've got to wait a long time for it to be used again.
Okay, now we can start using the game that shall not be named anymore in Overwatch. Question now becomes in terms of there are three different classes.
What's up?
There are three different classes. He's pouring. Yeah. He has a half gallon of eggnog that I'm assuming wasn't sitting in ice, right?
No, it was just under my desk.
So I have two questions for you before I get into the Overwatch 2 comparison.
Yeah, what's up, King?
Why did you not just drink right out of the carton?
Well, I knew that you'd have some questions, so I figured I'd just refill it in the middle. We can cut this out if we don't.
No, it's in. It's in
okay,
there.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah, that's happening right now.
Go on, I'm just milking the rest of this.
I see the drops happening as you're going through it. Yeah. Wow. The only thing upsetting about this is that the only way I saw that very clearly was through the Discord call, not through my OBS screen. So like I cannot use this as the Twitter video.
Oh, you didn't get it?
I got it. Twitter won't. You know what I mean?
That's unfortunate.
Oh, you seem so upset. Okay, six people, like six different players, and you have a total of three classes. My brain tells me 2-2-2 is the right option here, right? What do they do to make sure that we have that? Do they lock in certain roles? Is it just free for all? Do whatever the fuck you want?
This is where Overwatch... this is where other games in the genre have gone wrong.
We can use the word again.
Overwatch in quick play initially was just like, do whatever you want. And then all of a sudden they got worried about team composition. And then you would have to sign in to what sort of character you wanted to play. And so if you wanted to play DPS characters, you'd have to wait like 5 minutes. That sucks and is terrible. There is no system in place in Marvel Rivals to make it so that you have 2-2-2. In fact, the best matches are when everyone says, you know what? Oops, all tanks. It's awesome because it's unstoppable. They, like, you can't counter it. You cannot deal enough damage to take all of them down at once. It's so much fucking fun. But like, yes, if you are. Most games are not going to do that. Most games is going to be everyone wants to play DPS and you're like, please, someone be a tank. See, I love playing as Venom. So like, I love to be a tank and I don't mind being healers because I like to play the game and I like to play the objective and I like to like support people and assist people and like do what is required for the team. There might be like requirements in competitive, which I have played a bit of, but I've just pretty much played tank in competitive, which a lot of people like don't really want to do. So I don't know if there's like limitations in that. I believe in Overwatch, there were always limitations as to what you could do in competitive in terms of like, who could be what, you know, but there's nothing to stop that happening, which can be frustrating if you're like, I just want to be DPS, but everyone else is DPS and I don't want us to just fucking lose, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So would you, in your ultimate recommendation as someone who's played a lot of the games in the genre a lot, would you recommend that they just keep it open or that they should funnel it and let, or not, or
keep
funnel
it, open.
It, keep it open?
It was called roll queue in other games in the genre, and roll it sucks. Roll queue is terrible. It's not fun to wait 5 minutes to play a 3 minute game. You know what I mean? Mm. Like you're spending more time sitting and waiting. And in this game, it gets the thing right about the original Overwatch, where like from the moment that you enter the game, you will be within a match in 90 seconds.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Navigating through the menus and then clicking like start match, you just immediately are in. It's awesome. And it's free.
I mean, that's amazing. It's still crazy to me that Overwatch, the original, came out in a time where
when you could charge $60
when
for
you
that.
Could charge for the full price of the game, and it's still something that's crazy. Here's what's really shocking right now. The players right now for Overwatch 2, 22,000.
Okay.
The peak
on Steam?
Yeah, on Steam. The peak on Steam was 33,000. Now, I know Steam isn't definitive, but like, and that's in the past 24 hours.
Oh, okay. Got it.
The all-time peak in the past 16 months, 75,000.
Okay.
Like, to me, that's like not unhealthy, but when you talk about...
It's not huge.
Right, it's not huge at all. Marvel,
that's not what Overwatch was.
Right. Concurrent players.
Marvel Rivals had 400,000.
Right. That was
you mentioned that, I think.
Yeah, the last I saw. Oh, no, that's the playtest. Jeez, I don't want the playtest. Oh my God, just show me. Count. They keep showing me the playtest instead of Marvel Rivals, but I see it hits one day ago 450,000, which is still just crazy. Jesus.
Like, this game is like, people are going nuts for this thing.
Yeah.
And I get it. I am also going nuts for this.
I got to be honest. Like, when I was, like, looking at people playing this game, it was something that I want to pick up. What's it on right now? Just PC or everything?
PC, PlayStation, and Xbox. It's not on Switch, but they're saying that they are trying to get it on there.
I don't need that. Is it cross-play as well?
Yep. You can opt in for cross-play, or you can... You don't have to.
Okay, cool.
So I don't have it selected because I just don't want to play with PC players.
But can your account carry over?
Oh, that I do not know.
Okay. I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too. Yeah. But it's astounding.
Well, dang. Yeah, okay, yeah. Right now, the current players right now is 400,042.
Wait, say it again?
Well, I'm bad at numbers. 442,000.
That's still a lot.
Right? And the crazy thing...
420,000 more than Overwatch.
Right, and the crazy thing about that is that this was like... It's consistent. The 24-hour peak was 460,000. The all-time peak is 480,000. And it's pretty consistently, even during dead times, not sinking much lower than 200,000. Like,
yeah.
Consistently since launch.
And I think, you know, this comes from China. And I think this is a game that is like one of those examples of like, hey, this is a huge market. Video games are a huge market. And like, people in China are going to be down with this. People in the US are going to be down with this. People in Europe are going to be down with this. People all over the world are so down with this game. Like, And it is such a big IP, and it's just like a great celebration of that. And like, the art style is great. Like, it is phenomenal. And like, hey, this is a game that I think is built to last. I mean, I could be eating my words in you know, 2 months here and no one's playing this, but I think it has the juice, and I think it's, you know, on their, in their court to not sort of like ruin this.
What is the pay model? It's free to play, but like, how is that model of paying for stuff?
So there's a battle pass. I didn't really like any of this stuff in there, so I was like not interested in it. There's like skins and stuff. It's pretty like standard monetization stuff. I don't think any of the characters are going to be cost money, which is cool. And I think their whole thing is like this new way of doing battle passes where it's like if you buy the battle pass, it is valid forever.
Which is like, why not?
I cannot believe that it was never like that, that it was ever the other way.
I mean, if we're thinking about me as a player, someone who like gets... like significant bursts of time where I can play games, I've always been not incentivized to buy battle passes because I cannot guarantee that I'll be able to play it to its full worth. But the right. fact that you just buy it and then it's there forever, I think that is really cool and fantastic.
Yeah, 100%. And it is. Yeah, I like this. I don't think that the monetization is like in any way like, in my opinion, this game is like less monetized than Fortnite. You know, like there is less incentive for me to buy stuff than there is in Fortnite. And like, yeah, characters aren't behind a paywall or anything like that. Like, abilities aren't behind a paywall, which would be so easy to do in a game like this.
Yeah.
But it is not. It is entirely cosmetic. And so far, I haven't seen any cosmetics that I was like, fuck, I got to get that.
Mm, that's awesome. I'm excited to try this.
Yeah. Justin, can I tell you about another game that I played this week?
Oh my goodness, you are definitely.
I play a lot.
I feel inadequate right now.
It's a game called Mouthwashing. Have you heard of Mouthwashing?
When I used to swear a lot and I had to eat soap.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. This game I beat in about 2 hours. It is on Steam only, and it's about $12. Justin, I know this is a big ask of you.
Peter, are you okay?
I think you should play this game before the year is over. I just saw you click onto it because your whole face is bathed in red and you're watching a trailer right now, aren't you?
Yeah.
So this is a game that it is a narrative thriller set on a space station. Basically, it's like five people are like space truckers, and they basically work for, they're like Amazon drivers, basically. But their voyage is like 380 days and they're like 240 days into it, or maybe they're like 100 days into it. And something goes wrong on the ship and they get stranded out in the middle of space. And their captain is very badly injured. And it is the five of them. You play as the second in command, who becomes captain after the captain, Curly, is injured. And it is just a little drama piece about what goes on with these people. And it looks in the trailers like it's like this horror game, and it's not. I mean, it is a little bit, but it's not like, it's a thriller, and it is probably the best written game I've played all year.
I
started it on recommendation of Christian from work, and also like I'd seen some people talking about this. I beat it in one sitting, and I was sitting there, my mouth agape. I was like, holy fuck, this was so good.
Okay, like you talking about it makes me want to play it, but I'm still kind of confused as to what it is, specifically now watching it. Like, narrative thriller, like, what exactly, like, is its...
It's really simple. It is basically just walking around this space station. It's a pretty small space station. There's only five people on it. It is you play as a character named Jimmy. It also jumps back and forth in time between before the crash and after the crash, because the game opens with sort of an interesting sequence that happens that is the cause of the crash. And so you are jumping back and forth between several months after the crash, and it like jumps forward. So it'll be like, it starts like 2 months after the crash, and then 3 months after the crash, and then 4 months after the crash, and then the time before the crash. And so when you are in the past, you are playing as Curly, the current captain. And then when you are playing in the present, you are playing as Jimmy, the second in command, who has assumed the captain role because Curly is out of commission. And, You're basically just like walking around this ship, and you see, it's like these small little vignettes of scenes that happen. You go, you check in on everyone, and it is extraordinarily heavy. There's a lot, it is a very mature like subject matter and themes and stuff like that, around interpersonal relationships and like violence in between people, in like abuse in like a casual way and stuff like that. That seems casual, but is deeply upsetting. It is the story is told through like implication. So like I saw like the people posting on Steam, cause I finished and I was like, what the fuck? I was like, this was incredible. What? And I'm like looking up about it. And some people are saying like, why are people saying that this happened? Because if that happened, that would mean that all of these characters are really morally ambiguous. And it's like, yeah,
it's kind of the point there. Huh?
The whole point of this thing is grappling with this sort of like one event that happens.
Yeah.
And it is spectacular writing. Yeah, like I said, it's pretty gameplay light. Like there's some light puzzle solving stuff that happens. There is one section at the end that's fucking terrible where you're running away from this monster. It's like kind of like a it's like kind of in your head, where you have to like run through these halls, and like there's this like big like thing chasing you. It's not that scary, but it just is like more annoying because like the game isn't built for this, you know what I mean? And so eventually I got it by just like, you're just supposed to survive for a certain amount of time, but the game doesn't make it that clear. And it's like very easy to get killed. So it was like kind of frustrating. It's like the very last thing that you do as well. Yeah. So like, gosh, this sucks. But
wait, are we talking about Indiana Jones?
Well.
Gotcha. Okay. Is this game like disturbing? Like, the gun game, the creepy one, the click hold. Is it click hold?
A click holding?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Like, I guess one of those disturbing game experiences that you are both kind of experiencing a video game, but also experiencing, like, the point is the fact that you're there watching, like, this kind of, like, fourth wall breaking almost.
Click holding feels bad to play, and that's the point.
Yes.
That is not what this is.
Okay. Okay.
This is there is disturbing bits of this. Also, I was waiting the whole time for there to be a jump scare for jump scare stuff to happen. And it doesn't ever really happen. It's much more like thoughtful than that.
Yeah.
There is a single moment where something like that happens, but like you see it coming. You know what I mean? Which I guess doesn't make sense because like the whole time I felt like it was coming. But like when it happens, you're like, oh, OK, sure. Yeah. You know what I mean? But it's not like it's very tense because it's very like grimy and gross. I mean, the whole like I was talking to Elena about it and she's like, oh, I've seen this on TikTok. And she's like, is it the guy who's like wrapped up in all the bandages? And I was like, yeah. That's because that's the captain. He's still alive, but he is incapacitated. Mm. It's just like light spoilers for this. So there are some upsetting sequences where you have to feed him his pain medication and you have to like, you don't see it. It blacks out, but you like hear you sort of shoving the pain medication down his throat. And it's very upsetting to listen to, but the point of that is that is upsetting. And the inferences of what is going on with all of that plays into the larger narrative. I was astounded at how maturely and poignantly it handled its extraordinarily mature subject matter. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a really interesting concept. And guess what? While you were talking, I did purchase it on the Steam.
I am so happy to hear that. Mm. I loved it. I mean, like it's tough, right? Like it is not a feel good experience, but there's a moment where, so like, it's also a satire on like capitalism because like,
so is our country currently.
LOL. like the company you work for is like so grossly evil. But like, it's like Amazon. You're just like, oh, I'm a fucking truck driver. Like, what do you want from me? You read in the handbook that you are allowed each voyage is allowed one communal birthday. So everyone has to celebrate their birthday at the same day because they only are given allowed. They're only allowed one like ration for making a cake. Yeah. You know, like it's. There is some comedy in there about like the capitalism stuff that is cute and funny, but also like sad. They don't have any windows. So all of they have like simulated daytime and nighttime. And so there's a scene in the past where you are sitting with the woman on board, Anya, and she's explaining how she's like, this is going to sound so silly, but like I found this to be so poignant where she's like, there's in the top right of the screen, there's a dead pixel on the simulated like nighttime. And it looks like it's a star, but it's not, it's a dead pixel. And now that I've seen it, I can't not see it. And Curly's like, yeah, but like, what about the rest of the sky? And she's like, I know, but like, I only see this one pixel,
dude. That's me. I don't like that.
Which is how I feel this is how I feel with screens, but also like in real life, I was like, fuck.
No, it's, you get that it's one thing that you get fixated on.
Yes. And it's extraordinarily poignant. I like, seriously, like Elena sometimes will come in here when I'm playing games on the computer, and she'll sleep on the floor when she has to like work early the next day. And I'm like silently like losing my shit over how good this game is. And I just, it's over and I'm just sitting there with my mouth open like, wow, that was something crazy.
That's, I have bought it. I will probably play it before the year's up with all the, I mean, we're in the 9th of December. Can you imagine? Imagine what time it is.
I know. It's quick. And it was one of those things where like I said, I was playing it and I was like, I have to finish this right now. Like I have to find out what happens next and I have to understand how this all goes. And it's a great video. It's a great game to like watch videos on if you are kind of like looking for more of the meaning. Mm-hmm. Because the other thing is I was like there are things that I didn't catch, you know, I'm like, oh, that's what that meant. Or like, oh, that's what happened here, you know, because it is also like some non-literal stuff happens and things like that.
As an English teacher, I always feel like I wish more people would get into, like my students would get into books like this. Mm-hmm. I think it was for anthropology, they would play Gone Home. as like,
oh yeah, yeah, I remember that,
like a unit or a lesson that they would actually have to play, which I think is kind of cool. I don't think we do enough of that stuff in school. Do storytelling in a way that people can engage with, in a way that makes you want to, like, I don't think I'm finished reading The Crucible with my juniors. I don't foresee them going out and listening to fan theories on the internet about what happened in there versus something like this that you're truly interested in, that you want to do that. I mean, we've all done that before. We've fallen down the rabbit hole and started like looking things up and stuff like that. But I think whenever a story does that and you want to read more about it, I think that's when storytelling is at its best and its most awesome place.
Yes. And because, too, like I said, it is all implied. Like, it is never explicitly, like there are some obvious things that happen, but, like, what specifically the game is about is entirely implied.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, right? Like it's all, like I said, there were people online who were like, I'm sorry, if this happened, that would mean that all these characters, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yes, that's what it's about. Like, yes. Yes, you should feel weak. Like, it's about, like unpacking when these things happen, what does that mean about everyone involved? You know what I mean?
Yeah. When you keep saying it's like implying it and the implication, it reminds me of that one scene of Always Sunny in Philadelphia, where Dennis is like talking about, do you watch the show?
I've seen maybe three episodes.
I have only seen this on TikTok, but like he's talking about like basically like having a boat, so like he can get a girl on the boat, and like once they're out in the water, like, you know, they're gonna like, he's being really creepy about it, and he's like, you know, okay, and we're on the boat together, so you know the two of us will get together because, you know, the implication of it.
Oh, I have seen this.
And
yes.
Then Mac is like, I don't think that's a right. Like, you can't just assume that. He's like, oh no, it's fine because, you know, the implication. So like that, every time you said that, I'm like, okay, so this game is just an implication.
Yes, but it's so good. It's so tasty. Yeah. It's so good. And it's upsetting, right? Like, but not to the point of like upsetting to be upsetting. That's the point, right? It's just, it tells an upsetting story. But it tells it really well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it left me just sitting there like, fuck, man, I don't know. You know what I mean? which is how I like it. Mouthwashing. Give it a shot. I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it.
Just real quick. Can you tell me why it's called mouthwashing without spoiling the game?
It's a beat that happens relatively early on, but I don't want to spoil it because I think it's, like, it doesn't matter. Like, it's not like, I think there's implications as to what it means, but like I think there's, it's like, has multiple meanings of it, but yeah. Like, I if you're gonna play it, you'll be fine to find out what it means.
It's
not like a huge plot beat, but I think it's fun.
It doesn't mean I'll play it. It brought me back to that time when whenever I'd go on the Nintendo Switch store, look for sales, and buy a bunch of games I will never play.
Dragon's Dogma, just sitting on my Switch, like,
nah, still, it's been there before Dragon Dogma yeah. 2 even came out. It's been there, unplayed, yeah. But I think still installed, because I'm like, maybe, I don't know.
Who knows? Could happen. So yeah, there you go. Marvel Rivals, Indiana Jones, The Great Circle, mouthwashing. Justin, let's talk about the news.
Woo!
Just a few quick news stories here. I think the big one of note is from Software. Hidetaka Miyazaki said he was interviewed by IGN Japan, and this was translated by Automaton. Don't know what that is. It's apparently a Japanese language publication. IGN Japan asked Miyazaki about, like, hey, you know, what's in the pipeline? Are you guys working on Elden Ring 2? And here is what Miyazaki said. We're not really considering developments such as Elden Ring 2. I'll just read this for you. We're not really considering developments such as Elden Ring 2, Miyazaki said, though made clear From Software is open to returning to the Elden Ring franchise in some form in the future. The projects in development are works in progress at the moment, but diverse in genre, with some directed by Miyazaki himself, he said. So, not a whole lot of information here. A lot of people are saying, like, oh my gosh, we're not doing Elden Ring 2? What are you talking about? You're leaving money on the table. But, like, clearly he's saying, like, you know, obviously, like, a game that sells like that, like, we are open to returning to it. But what I can appreciate is it sounds like they have the clout enough to say, like, we're going to do what we're going to do and, like, let us cook, which I think is when From Software is at its best, when it does something new. Like, you look at, Bloodborne tried something new. You look at Dark Souls tried something new. You looked at Sekiro tried something new. Elden Ring. Those are all like new ideas that are not iterative of what came. I mean, they're like have learned from what came before, but they're not like iterative. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What do you think is the difference in your brain between Dark Souls and Elden Ring?
Like, what do you mean?
The Souls series. So Dark Souls 1, 2, and 3 and Elden Ring.
It's about the interconnected worlds that Elden Ring doesn't really have. I mean, it does. It has those like more legacy dungeons, but they're not like they're not the same mm-hmm. as that like really like super densely packed, like open, like connected stuff. I also think that like the combat in Elden Ring is just a lot snappier and quicker, which I said this when after I finished Shadow of the Erdtree, I went and replayed Dark Souls 3. And like that game, it feels so slow. But it's not bad. It's just more deliberate and intentional, if that makes sense. You're just like a lot less agile, which means that you have to really commit to what you're doing. So it feels a little bit more methodical. Whereas like in Elden Ring, you just like are like carpet bombing guys like as you're running by them on torrent. You know what I mean? And like jumping around and like flipping around and all that.
Do you think there's drastic difference between Dark Souls 1, 2, and 3?
Yeah, I mean like. There's iteration, right? And I think like Dark Souls 1 is a lot more of the interconnected world stuff, whereas Dark Souls 3 just gets a lot more linear. I also think, you have iteration in terms of like there's a magic bar in Dark Souls 3 that there isn't in Dark Souls 1 and 2. You have like power stances and all sorts of other, like there's like a lot of like mechanical differences, but I would say that they feel a lot closer together than Dark Souls 3 does to like Elden Ring in terms of like the actual feel of playing it.
Okay, that makes sense. And some of the mechanics too, plus the whole mm-hmm. jump system and stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, I guess at a certain point, we're to a point where From Software doesn't need to rely on a sequelitis. I think no. From Software says we're making this game. You could literally fill this game with anything and people would jump for it. You could say yeah. From Software was making Indiana Jones and people would probably lose their minds.
Be insane.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine that? And instead of collecting your souls, you just collect your hat at the end. It's like left where you died last and you have to come back and get it.
You don't even understand how funny that is. So in Indiana Jones, there's a perk where if you get killed, your hat just falls off and you get to pick up your hat.
Well, I mean,
it's like a second life.
There you go.
That's what the game is.
Wait. Who made Indiana Jones again? It was...
That is From Software.
Nothing to do with... it is From... Okay, got it. Yeah.
No, it's Machine Games.
And From Software. It's a collab.
Yeah, collab, yes. It's it
yeah.
together.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I don't think this is a bad thing. I think, go ahead and work on whatever you want. I'm down. In fact, I'm glad that you're not just immediately working on Elden Ring 2, because Elden Ring is great. Shadow of the Erdtree is great. I want you to do something new, like iterate on Sekiro, please. Or like do something with like the Bloodborne, like parry system, like change something up. I would be interested in that.
What do you mean? They did in fact come out with an Elden Ring 2. It's called Shadow of the Erdtree, right?
I don't know why they didn't just make that a standalone expansion.
You can buy it alone. You don't have to like have the previous copy purchased in order to do it. You don't have to get to a certain point in the game. Even you can just boot it up right away.
You don't have to play. It's like 50 hours.
No. It's really easy to get. It's just immediately just start and play.
It's a good game though. It's a good game.
Erdtree or
both.
Katsugami.
Although Erdtree is DLC.
Kintsugami, Path of the Goddess.
Yeah. Also a good game.
Also a good game. Game of the year, some might say.
For some, it's not my game of the year, unfortunately. But it's a good game. X-Defiant. Do you remember this game, Justin?
Briefly, was this the one that was the... Remedy did the campaign, or am I crazy? Am I thinking of something else?
No. You were thinking of Crossfire X.
Okay, yeah.
And Remedy did Remedy do the fucking campaign for Crossfire X?
I thought they did. I might be crazy. It was a big studio, I thought, that did like the main campaign. No, Medium. Was it? Wait, was it?
Why did Remedy do the campaign for Crossfire X?
Why not? I mean, the Remedy, they need money. They're struggling. No one likes their games.
Why the fuck did they do this? This is insane. Okay, so yeah, they did. That's crazy because it's terrible. It's terrible. Oh my gosh, it's terrible.
Well, I mean, if someone offered you $1 million to write something that they have no quality control on, and they said, no matter what, you're going to get this $1 million.
Yeah, geez. X-Defiant came out earlier this year. It was a kind of a 6v6 hero shooter, but it's a lot closer to Call of Duty. It's closer to like Call of Duty Black Ops 4, which was the hero shooter battle royale one. Mm-hmm. Not battle royale. I think it was just a hero shooter. Where like you chose different heroes, but like they're like ultimately the same. Like they just have like different like perks. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, oh, sniper. Oh, shotgun guy. And this was a big Ubisoft crossover between like you had different factions that were in the game. So like the different like classes were like the characters from Watch Dogs or the characters from what are the Sam Fisher games? You know what I mean? But they didn't have any of their like most recognizable characters, or like it was also like faceless characters. It was just like a guy from. Oh, sorry. It was just like a guy from the Sam Fisher people. It wasn't like Sam Fisher, or it wasn't like the main character from Watch Dogs. It was just like one of the guys. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So this was meant to be a Call of Duty killer. Remember back in the day when like games would come out and they were meant to be a killer for something else? They were meant to like kill, like, what's that game? I'm seeing it in my head. It's like a yellow mask and there's like the mask is shattered around an eye and it was supposed to be the Halo killer. Haze?
Borderlands. Call of Duty.
Haze. You will totally recognize this thing. It was on the PlayStation 3. And it was terrible. Just like not very good.
Haze with an E, video game.
H-A-Z-E.
Ooh, I'd play this game over anything else. It looks like they're ripping off, what's that guy's name?
Crysis a little bit?
Deadshot.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that too.
Yeah. From the Arrowverse.
Oh.
Really make it specific for that.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
But so X-Defiant was meant to be Call of Duty killer.
The main character's name looks like it's Carpenter Hayes. No, Carpenter Hayes. The name of the game is Hayes. Carpenter Shane or Shane Carpenter. Isn't that the most like video game name? I'm Shane Carpenter.
And it's so like so Jesus coded.
I really do hope it's Carpenter Shane, not Shane Carpenter.
Carpenter Shane.
Yeah.
Not like that.
My name's Carpenter Shane.
But X-Defiant launched earlier this year. I played it for a single evening. You'll remember we looked at this last week in our bonus episode, my backlogged review of my 1.5 star review of X-Defiant. Let's see, what did I write here? I just want to make sure I get it exactly as I wrote it. I said, downloaded for free and still felt like I got ripped off. Not a good game. Unfortunately, it is shutting down. It is sunsetting. They are sunsetting progress starting December 3rd, so last week. They say Season 3 will still launch. Servers will remain active, and the game will be fully playable until June 3rd, 2025. So you got about 6 months or so if you're a big X-Defiant fan.
Well, they give me plenty of warning here.
This thing was like, I mean, when did this come out? It's going to be even like up for a year. X-Defiant came out May 21st, 2024. So yeah, just a little over a year and then this thing is gone, which is interesting too, because in October, Mark Rubin, the director of the game, said in an interview, like in a blog post rather, it says this verbatim on this blog post. I just want to quickly address the status of the game, i.e. is the game dying? Rubin said, no, the game is absolutely not dying. We know there are things we need to improve, like netcode/hitreg and adding more content to progression, but the game is doing well. And so like that was 2 months ago. And then now, nope, sunsetting. It's just a shame. Like, I don't think this is a good game. I don't think that this was going to like, I don't think this was distinct enough to be able to find its own audience and kill Call of Duty. What are you talking about? Call of Duty is like an institution that's not going to go away. Is X-Defiant going to sell and be the main reason for a $6.9 billion sale? No, guys, what are you talking about? But it is just a shame that like these games come out and then just get shut down so fast. The other game we have here is Foam Stars, which if you remember, this was like the Splatoon foam game from Square Enix.
Oh, that's gone too?
It's not gone. It's kind of interesting. It's got one more season that's going to come out.
Okay.
And then it is going to remain playable, but there is going to be like no new content for it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not shutting down in the same way that X Defiant is, at least not yet. But in the same week, it was like 2 days after this happened, they were like, yeah, and this is also sort of sunsetting. And then also what sucks, too, is Ubisoft is closing two of its studios. It's Japan studio and then it's San Francisco studio. So like that company is in some trouble right now. But yeah, just kind of sucks that like these games just show up and then just disappear. You know what I mean?
Why do you think Marvel Rivals will avoid this fate?
It's Marvel and it's doing Overwatch better than Overwatch is doing.
You're one upping the industry standard, at least the 1 point industry standard.
Correct. If I were making a video, now I'm not so smart, right?
You're pretty
smart.
But
if I were making a video game,
you never talk to yourself about like that.
If I were making a video game, I wouldn't say, who can I take down? The game that has billions and billions and billions of dollars going into it at all times, or a game that was popular in 2016 and has not seen the same success since.
Yeah, yeah.
I would go for the market of that one. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because Marvel Rivals isn't competing with like Call of Duty and Fortnite. It's competing with Overwatch, and like Marvel Rivals is like Jake Paul challenging Mike Tyson to a fight, where it's like, yeah, man. Yeah, it
you're
was
gonna
sad
win.
To watch.
Yeah,
why did you like? You didn't prove anything to anyone. Not that Marvel Rivals isn't good. It's not an incredible 1-to-1. You know what I mean? But yeah. Like, does it make sense? Like, yeah. Like they chose their fight properly and they chose what they were gonna do properly. Whereas this game, in my opinion, did not. And also, I just don't think that Ubisoft games like feel particularly good for the most part. Like their shooting never feels great. In my experience, but it's just me.
Well, so there you go. I get saddened whenever a company closes or whenever a game shuts down, because I know there's a lot of implications
behind
that one way or another. So regardless of playing these games or not, I just know it's more studio shutting down, more of these idea. Let's try to make these free to play games work that another one didn't work. So which is why when something like Marvel Rivals happens, I get both excited because it's a good game out, but also, shit, people are going to see this and want to emulate that poorly.
Yes, and it's the thing where, like, oh my gosh, I bet that you guys are not going to learn the right lessons from this.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, I mean the industry. Like you were going to say, oh, we need more hero shooters. And I was like, no. That's how you get Concord.
Mm-hmm. To be fair, you know. I still going to go, I'm dying that hill. I do not think Concord was the worst piece of shit ever.
No, it's not a bad game. It was uninteresting.
Yeah,
you know, just didn't have that hook.
Yeah.
I'll say this though: if you're sad that Concord is gone, like Marvel Rivals is free, and it's a similar vibe, you know, of like Overwatchy, objectivey. It's not even the knockoff Guardians of the Galaxy. It's just the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Do you know what else is free, Peter?
Tell me.
Hitbox.
It's true. Or, you can be a deluxe podcast producer or a regular podcast producer like Jane LGCast and Josh Drum. Justin, I'm glad that you brought this up, because I've been meaning to say this, and I've been meaning to wrap the show up here for about 30 seconds now, trying to figure a way out.
Like basically when we transitioned to the closing, I was ready to stop.
Yeah,
it.
Same mind. So if you want to support us there, you can certainly do that. You can also join our Discord server. You can support us on Twitter by following us at HitboxPod or rating this episode in your podcast player of choice. I think that's going to do it for us, Justin, today. We talked a lot about games, not a lot about the news, but there's just not been a lot of news. I think there's going to be a decent amount of news next week after the Game Awards.
Black Myth Wukong won everything?
It's gonna win something, right?
If it wins like game, if it wins, game, if it wins game of the year, it's
no fucking chance.
It's gonna feel very.
No fucking
it's
chance.
Gonna feel so much like the Bears and the Commanders that Hail Mary defeat this season. I'm gonna scream. Yes. My wife is gonna be very concerned. She's gonna tell me. She's gonna concern. Look at me. Hold my hand and be like, I've never heard you make that sound before. And
if it wins, it's gonna feel like. I'll be like, might as fucking well with the results that we've been seeing in the world. Oh, man.
Gotta love it.
Please don't let this. It can't happen. Because here's the thing. Elden Ring will win, or, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think there's a reality where this game wins. Game of the year at the very least. But that's going to do it for us. We will catch you next week. Always remember, old games are old. Bye.
Bye.
I'll stop recording.